É jogado por Simão, a passar por dois adversários. Simão a tentar oferecer o golo a Figo e a bola é gol! O golo da
Rui Figo. Costa vai, Rui Costa já acreditou, vai tirar para o golo, atira o golo! Golo! Golo!
And we welcome you into episode number 3 of the Seleção Podcast. My name is Danny Pinto. I am your host. Again, thank you everyone for your support of the show thus far. We're getting a great response via our interactions on our Facebook page, our Twitter account, and our Instagram. Facebook page, Seleção, just search Seleção Podcast on Facebook, on Twitter, and on Instagram. We are at Seleção Pod. Again, a great response so far. As we mentioned last week, we have listeners from all three countries in North America, the U.S., Mexico, and Canada. We also have reached the shores of Portugal and also our friends across the pond in England. So we want to thank you all for your support of this grassroots effort here to get as many people talking about the most beautiful team in all the land, in all the world, which is our beloved Seleção. Today on episode 3, as I mentioned the first couple of episodes, I've wanted to try to get some members of the media who cover the team on our show, and I am very fortunate to have a member of the media on today's episode, as we have Rui Miguel, who is the editor-in-chief of FootballFactory.com. You can find him on Twitter at FootballFactory. He covers the Seleção for that website, and he's based out of Toronto. Reached out to him early on in our process, and we are very thankful to have him on the show. But first, we will start off with Portugal's previous match versus Belgium in Brussels this past weekend. A 0-0 draw. Belgium playing much of their first team against the Seleção. Portugal making several changes from the Tunisia match, including tactically as they played the majority of the match in a 4-3-3. At keeper, Bet got the start in place of Anthony Lopes, and still no Rui Patrice in the net for Portugal. Pep and José Font, they got the start at center, at the center-back position. José Font in for Ruben Dias, who started against Tunisia. Ricard Pereira, he was replaced by Cedric Suárez at right-back. Rafael Guerreiro, he got his second straight start at left-back, and that actually played all 90 minutes, which is a good sign. William Carvalho, João Moutinho, and João Mário were your midfielders, with Bernardo Silva, Gonçalo Guedes, and Gelson Martins, your three in the attack. Portugal, they were without two players unavailable. Cristiano Ronaldo, he missed his second straight game due to rest. He, as of this podcast, has now reported to the Cidade de Futebol in Portugal and is finally participating in camp. Adrian Silva, he who started against Tunisia, he stayed back in Portugal, did not make the trip to Brussels as he is nursing what is hopefully just a minor leg injury. He today also reported to the Cidade de Futebol, but did not participate with the team, but he did work out on his own. As for the match, some observations. Again, it was a 0-0 draw. There will not be any highlights played, unlike last week's 2-2 game against Tunisia. But what I liked, I loved what I saw in the back four. I poked a little fun at José Font in the last episode by alluding to the fact that it may have been his fault that Portugal gave up the tying goal against Tunisia. He came in for Pep last game, and then a minute later, Tunisia tied the game. But he and Pep kind of picked up where they had left off during qualifying and in Euro 2016, in my opinion. Just a very solid partnership, one that I think, along with the fullbacks Cedric and Rafael Guerreiro, I think you might be looking at your starters when Portugal lines up against Spain on the 15th in Russia. But Cedric, I thought, was very solid. A pretty no-nonsense approach to his performance. And Rafael Gajeda, as I mentioned, he played all 90 minutes, which is a good sign in terms of his returning to full fitness. And he is a very, very important player, in my opinion, for Portugal's success in Russia 2018. The midfield, I think, was pretty solid again. William Carvalho pretty much cementing his role as the center central defender in the midfield. Well, he has to be because there's no other central defender in the midfield. But he's playing a very high quality soccer right now. And João Moutinho, you know, he's one of the guys that is a bit forgotten in this run up to 2018. He could very well start against Spain and be very productive. I thought he was very solid. He distributed the ball very well and just was very calm, cool, and collected as he normally is. I think that João Mário and Bernard Silva are absolutely ready for Russia 2018. I thought Bernard Silva created a lot of chances for himself and for others, especially in the first half. And João Mário, to me, is playing with a confidence that is really showing on the pitch. Again, he's not doing anything flashy, but it seems like every touch has meaning when he has the ball. There's no empty play with him. It's high quality soccer, high quality football, and I'm very excited for both of those players to team up with André Silva and Cristiano Ronaldo when it comes to the World Cup. As for the younger players in the attack, Gonçalo Guedes and Gelson Martins, I believe showed some promise, but I also played. But I think they also played much like the young players that they are. I thought Gelson Martins, in my opinion, struggled for the most part in his start. He seemed like he was very uncomfortable with the ball when he did have the ball. I didn't think he made as many good runs as I would have liked for him to have done in this chance as a starter. If I was Nunsunch, I would not look for him to be one of my primary options off the bench. But I am not Nunsunch, so I'll trust the mister as far as he wants to take us. But Gelson Martins, in my opinion, would not be my first guy to come off the bench. Whereas Gonçalo Guedes, I mean, he did not score, so he, you know, some of you may think that, you know, if neither of them scored, then they both might be in the same position. But I just think that he seemed to be a bigger threat, and I thought he linked up better in the midfield than did Gelson Martins. And I think he can be a very, very effective option, a top option for Nunsunch, both up top if he wants to spell André Silva, or dare I say it, Cristiano Ronaldo. But I would never take Cristiano Ronaldo off the field. I wouldn't take him off the field if he got a red card and the referee told me to. But I think up top or as a wing, I think he'd be a very good option off the bench. Or even in a spot start, I think he has the quality. He had a great year at Valencia, and I think if he's surrounded by high quality players, I think he could flourish in a spot starting role. The substitutions, I thought, much like the previous match against Tunisia, no one did anything to really impress me in their limited time. Ricardo Quaresma was the first off the bench. He came in for Gelson Martins. Manuel Fernandes came in for João Mário. André Silva came in for Bernard Silva. Bruno Fernandes got his first taste of some action as in this lead up to World Cup 2018. He came in for João Moutinho in the last 5 minutes or so. And then Mário Rui was subbed in right before the final whistle for Gonçalo Guedes. I don't believe he touched the ball, so not much to make of his appearance. So again, the subs weren't very impressive last week against Tunisia in a 0-0 game. Not much to say about them as well. But again, these are friendlies. You're just trying to figure out what's working and what's not, and of course, not pick up any injuries. As for the subs that were not used, Bruno Alves, he was not used for a second straight match, and two starters from the last match, Ruben Dias and Ricardo Pereira, also did not play. And they actually had one sub that they did not use. They only used five of the six allotted subs for the friendly. For the upcoming game against Algeria on Thursday, I want Rui Patrice to start. I think Rui Patrice needs to start. So much speculation, as we mentioned last episode, with his future, with his relationship with Sporting. There is just a lot going on in his brain, and I think just getting him on the field in a competitive match might do the trick to kind of see exactly where he is leading up to the World Cup. I know Ronaldo has reported to camp. I would bubble wrap that man for whatever time he is out on the field. We obviously need him to be a serious threat to make a long run in World Cup 2018. So I definitely think he needs to get some starting 11 time with the guys there. But if I was Fernando Sanchez, I'd play him 45 minutes and then get him out. I would like to see some extended looks for some of the young guys. I think even though he struggled, I think Gelson Martins needs another good run. I hope at least a half. I'd like to see what Mario Hui can do in an extended play. I personally would love to see him start in place of Rafael Guerreiro, just to make sure that Rafael Guerreiro doesn't pick up any needless injuries, as he has been so injury prone the last year or so. I'd love to see what Bruno Fernandes can do. I'd like to see Ruben Dias and Ricard Pereira get another look at their respective defensive positions. Not saying that they need or will be replacing the starters from the Belgium game, but I just would like to see more of them with the Selection. And of course, no injuries. Just get out of the match against Algeria at Stade de Luge without any injuries. You're hoping that Adrian Silva can come back and that he's not rushed back. But he did not make the trip to Belgium. But you just don't want to get or pick up any more injuries. Just get out of there unscathed and just do what you can. So, as for feedback on social media, you know what happens when a game goes 0-0? You don't hear much from anybody. So, hopefully this upcoming match against Algeria will get our social media game going up again. But again, facebook.com/SelectSoundPod, @SelectSoundPod on both Twitter and Instagram. And, of course, you can always email the show at SelectSoundPod@gmail.com. And if you're listening to us, again, thank you so much. Again, download us and subscribe to us on iTunes, podcast.com, and PlayApod. PlayApod you can download on both iOS and Android. As I mentioned before, we had reached out to many folks in the media who cover the team, and I was fortunate enough to record an interview with Rui Miguel from footballfactory.com. You can follow him at footballfactory on Twitter. I was able to get some time with Rui Miguel to talk about the team, and here is the interview. We are very excited to bring in now to the Selection podcast. I had mentioned in the last couple of episodes, our first two episodes, that we were trying to reach out to not only friends of mine that watch the team and are as passionate about the team as I am, but also trying to get members of the media who cover the team on a regular basis. And we are so very fortunate to have one of those members of the media today on the Selection podcast, episode 3. His name is Rui Miguel. He is the editor-in-chief of Football Factory, based out of Toronto. And I am very fortunate to have him on the show for episode 3 of the podcast. Rui, bem-vindo to the Selection podcast, sir. How are you?
I'm very good. Muito bem. Obrigado.
Well, first of all, just tell us a little bit about yourself, how you guys started covering the team, and a little bit about Football Factory.
Well, first, it started when I was born a Portuguese male, so that had a lot to do with it. I've grown up, I was actually born in Portugal, but I've grown up in Toronto, Canada, where there's a massive Portuguese community, especially on the downtown west side. It's kind of the type of community where most of the businesses are Portuguese, and I went to elementary school and high school is mostly with people of our culture, and I basically picked up I got into soccer particularly a little bit late, in my late teens, early 20s, and then eventually after I finished school, I started like the blog, which is footballfactory.com, and then the Twitter account, and I've really built like a nice, I think I've built a nice following over the years, and I'm passionate about it. Good times or bad times, I just love to watch the game.
And you can follow Hui at on Twitter at Football Factory, FUTEBOL Factory on Twitter, and as he mentioned, on footballfactory.com. Hui, again, thank you so much for joining us for this episode. Let's get your initial thoughts on the last match, the 0-0 draw against Belgium. What did you think of the performance of the Slesong?
Well, overall, I thought it was generally positive. I think we have to take into account that Belgium is a team that's, I mean, in the level of talent is really close to Portugal, and it's got well over several good options at each position. It's got a lot of attacking pedigree. And overall, I thought the first 20 minutes, it looked like, when I was watching it, the 20 minutes looked like Belgium would be running away with it. I guess it's unsurprisingly, since seeing that they were the home side and that they were probably a little bit more determined. But after the first 20 minutes, as Fernando Santos said after the match, Portugal had settled in and grew in confidence. Overall, I thought it was a very positive display in terms of the defense, the structure, and the kind of attacking nucleus of the side. So it was definitely one to derive some positivity out of it. At the same time, though, I want to kind of temper some expectations here. I mean, at the end of the day, it was still a 0-0 draw. I don't particularly think they came ever really too close to scoring on Thibaut Courtois. I think overall, I think there was just certainly some room to grow. Of course, that has something to do with the fact that we were missing our talisman and Cristiano Ronaldo, and also the fact that we were playing a little bit with an experimental squad. Overall, I'll finish with going over some of the positive elements, the positive performances. I thought José Font, I think a lot of people worried about the center back position, and I thought he looked great. He did a lot better than I had expected. I thought Rafael Guerreiro and Cedric attacked and defended really well. Like, defensively, as a unit, it was really a good night. And Fernando Santos, who preaches that side of the game more than probably the attacking part of it, felt real, would be very happy about how things turned out. In midfield, I thought William Carvalho had another stormer. João Mário, a guy like Font, didn't have probably the best season, but he looked really good playing at the center of the park. And I tweeted a little bit about this afterwards, but I thought the front three of Bernardo, Guedes, and Gilson Martins, Guedes and Gilson Martins, I thought they combined well, and they had their chances, particularly on the break, but I don't think they particularly attested Courtois enough. So certainly that would be something for Santos to reconsider.
We're talking with Hui Miguel, of Football Factory, editor-in-chief of Football Factory, based out of Toronto, here on the Seleção podcast. I am your host, Danny Pinto. Hui, talking about the defense, I for one thought that back four kind of solidified itself as probably the back four going forward for the tournament. Again, it's a friendly, but it is against a high talent side like Belgium. I think that's a back four who would probably see against a team like Spain to open up the tournament. But I thought the back four, I thought William Carvalho, I think that back four plus that central defense in the midfield, I think that is really good to go going forward in Russia.
Yeah, absolutely. Again, I think there's been a lot of talk about the center back pairing. Pepe seems to be, you know, a given, a guarantee. Whereas, like, but there's a major question about who would partner him. But I thought Font looked real comfortable. He didn't look like he had only spent the last 3 months playing at a league like China. He looked more like the Jose Font from the knockout stages of Euro 2016. So yeah, I would definitely agree with you. I think Cedric, I think on the right side of the park, Cedric has got that position nailed down, as did Rafael Guerrero, providing he of course stays healthy. Pepe is indisputable. I would like to also add that I thought Ruben Diaz played really well against Tunisia too.
I did too.
And I think he deserves kind of a mention. But having said that, he is a 21-year-old kid with about half a season of experience. And I think you and I are young enough to remember how we were at 21. We're not confident. Something simple could. Yeah, something small could kind of set off balance, and affect our confidence. Well, and sometimes people forget that, you know, professional athletes, as much as they might be, you know, exceptional in a way, they are at the end of the day still human. So, but it will be very interesting to see who partners Pepe in the match on Thursday against Algeria at the Stadio de Luz, because I think that game will go a long way into determining, like, I think that squad will probably more likely be the squad that will play, the starting 11 that will line up against Spain, who are certainly one of the tournament favorites.
Well, you mentioned Rafael Guerreiro, and he's coming back from, he started the camp with coming back from a bit of illness, and also had a relatively injury plagued season in Germany, but he is penciled in at left back, no question. But are there injury or fitness concerns in your opinion heading into this last match? That would, I mean, are we looking, do you think we're looking at any kind of a scenario where Fernand Sanch may be looking at one of the 12 guys he didn't bring on in that initial 35-man roster to replace somebody? You know, I read actually from your tweets this morning that Adrian Silva had returned to training. Although not with the team, he was just training by himself, recovering from his injury. But are there any players right now with any kind of injury struggle that may preclude them from making it to Russia next weekend?
Well, as it stands, Adrian's injury, he played last time against Tunisia, as you would recall. So Adrian's injury, I'm assuming he trained kind of apart from the squad, but he still probably does some light running and but no contact. That tells me that he's probably not very far away from returning to game action. And a week and a half should be more than enough to overcome the problem he already had, unless it's one of those kind of like muscle injuries, those thigh injuries that you hear a lot about in football and in soccer, as opposed to other sports. But seeing that, I'm assuming it's not that, he should be okay. When it comes to like the entire squad in particular, he's the only one that sat out today. So the other 22 players, Ronaldo included, who joined the squad today, trained. So basically the rule is if you could train normally with the squad, you should be able to play nine times out of 10. So as of right now, there aren't really any fitness concerns. But you see with like Guerrero, he has a history of injuries, and seeing that he's still trying to get, he's probably not at 100%. He's probably like around 80%. So there's always that high possibility that he might get another thigh injury, for example. But as of right now, there's really no reason to be concerned about injuries.
I guess I'm still trying to figure out a way to get Hooban Nevj on this World Cup team, but it may not it may not be happening. We're speaking with Huy Miguel, the editor in chief of FootballFactory.com. You can follow Huy on Twitter at FootballFactory. Let's go to, instead of an injury or fitness concern, more of a mental concern, and I'm talking about Portugal's number one goalkeeper, Rui Patrice. He's had a remarkable last month, and I use remarkable in a negative connotation this time. I was surprised that he wasn't put into the game to start against Belgium, but I can understand why. I would hope that he would get the start against Algeria on Thursday for the last game. But what have you been reading? What have you been hearing about Rui Patrice's preparation for World Cup 2018?
Well, in particular, when it comes to the players, they are kind of sticking to what players always do: stick to a script. Say, you know, what will kind of cause the least amount of controversy. So they are. I think Matinho spoke today. I think Fonte spoke over the last few days too, since the story broke, and it's the same kind of. Actually, I've noticed none of the sporting players were made participated in the press conference over the last a few days since the story broke. So that's a little bit of telling. I guess you can make an assumption there. But basically, I think this is something that will one of the stories that will hover around the team at least for the first few games. Shows any indication that he's not mentally sound, then I could foresee the possibility of Fernando Santos having to kind of intervene, maybe drop him probably for Anthony Lopez. Who I would be okay with, but I think we understand that this is a short tournament, and small mistakes could cost you a lot here. So I think with Rui Patrício, he's really rarely caused any sort of drama whatsoever. It's a little bit unfortunate that this has happened before the major tournament, which makes me think. You know, maybe he saw this as enough of a important enough to make his feelings be known now, instead of concealing it. So I don't know. It's like at this point, I think it's more speculation than anything. But I think Santos, I think he's a man. He's a very cultured, experienced manager, and I think if he has to make, like, he's made the brave decisions before. It's just, such as, you know, leaving Eder out of most of qualifying, for example, dropping certain players throughout Euro 2016 on short notice. So I think Santos would expect him to be brave again, and if he thinks it's the Patricio situation will become a problem.
You know, I was going to ask you about the sporting situation to finish up the interview, but let's go to it right now before we end with your expectations for the tournament. Can you give us just, and there's so many moving pieces to this story, but can you just give us a quick synopsis of the last month or so with sporting and what the latest news is?
Oh boy. Okay. So I guess you can say it started with this kind of, I would say, ill-conceived war between Bruno de Carvalho, the elected club president, and the players. And apparently they were, after Sporting was eliminated by Atletico Madrid, in the Europa League, he sounded off on Facebook. You know, we've all been there. We've all sounded off on social media.
isn't that the most responsible thing to do when you're the president of a club, to just go on social media and and make your voice heard.
Yeah, but anyway, that was just the beginning. That was just the beginning, and I think at that point, most fans are going to give players the benefit of the doubt. Like, we know club presidents, owners, you know, fans, sportistas and benficistas, they understand that your club hierarchy, you know, it's not the club. They feel attached to the stadium, the colors, the players, and the history, right?
Sure.
We understand the president, that it's the politician, so to speak. They're not the representative of the club always. But anyway, just moving on. There was that standoff, and in the end, Bruno de Carvalho capitulated a little bit, and then we had one of the worst, kind of ugliest episodes I can really think of the sport, when a band of about, I'm not sure how many there were, like a few dozen thugs, seemed to enter into their training facility at Al Kushit, which is this this community just south of the river from Lisbon, and Baz Dost was assaulted. Certain players were threatened, and it was a really ugly episode. And then there was that, which also seemed to put more pressure on Bruno de Carvalho. And then late last week, was it Friday, I believe, the day before the Belgium match, the story broke that Rui Patricio, who's been heavily linked to a move out away from the club to Napoli as well as Wolverhampton, were recently promoted to the Premier League. He submitted like a request. I'm not sure. I'm not a legal person here, an illegal expert, but he submitted a request to the club, announcing his intention to rescind his contract. To be honest, I read a little bit over it. It's basically on the grounds that he felt that the club didn't do enough to assure his safety. And this is all legal stuff. Like, in the United States has it, the legal code. Canada has it, Portugal has it, and it's your employer is responsible for assuring your safety. But he also alleged a kind of inhospitable environment within the club that made him difficult to do his job. So this is all highly speculative, but we have to assume that probably he meant Bruno de Carvalho, or someone within the high brass at the club. And youngster Daniel Pudence, who's also George Mendes's client, submitted, I'm told, pretty much the same sort of request. But this is like, considering on the pace of Portuguese justice, I highly doubt that this will be resolved soon. this is all like today. What came out was the club Sporting is alleging that Benfica illegally approached Rui Patricio, who's still technically under contract with Sporting, because it's not like any court has ruled that, you know, he could rescind his contract, right? So they're alleging that Benfica made an illegal approach, and this is actually kind of similar to what Barcelona is going to with Antoine Griezmann. Atletico Madrid, Antoine Griezmann's current club, is alleging that Barcelona made a play for Antoine Griezmann.
Correct.
Outside the transfer window. So that's illegal. So that is completely within kind of like the norm or the rules of the transfer window. So that was the latest news. And of course, we got this ever-present figure, George Mendes, sort of like, and he kind of haunts, you know, Portuguese soccer like, I don't know what, like the ghost of Christmas past or something, right? So, yeah, so at this point, it's highly speculative. So we don't know where George Mendes fits in. It could be any a number of things. It could be Patricio and Pudence and some of the players trying to force Bruno de Carvalho out. It could be Patricio, who just wants to, you know, he's, you know, with all respect, I love Rui Patricio, but you know, he's paid his dues in Portugal. He's 30, and he just may just want to leave. Sure. But at the same time, Sporting is his club, And I mean, like, it's like you have a contract with your employer, right? And you sign the contract, and they're within a legal means to prevent you going to a competitor, for example. And then we have, you know, George Mendes, and what role does he play in? Is he just trying to get a bigger cut from Wolves? Sporting is a legend. They want, he's trying to get millions of dollars, like, from this transfer. And essentially, I call it like short selling the club. Well, why should he get the big piece of the pie, right? He's negotiating, but there's got to be some. Basically, there's got to be some sort of more transparency when it comes to the transfer window, and like how much money should an agent earn from negotiating these transfers when it's a club that, you know, develops them, coaches them, signs them, nurtures them, takes care of them, essentially, a lot of these players that, you know, come from rough backgrounds. They might do a lot for them. The club might do a lot for them, too, you know, to help their family along. So to what extent should the AA agents be involved in this? And George Mendes, we all know, if you were around Portuguese soccer a lot, he's a very influential figure, and I think in some ways he's helped he's also Cristiano Ronaldo and Jose Mourinho's agent, so he's done a lot for the Portuguese soccer, but at what point does that start to change, you know, if he's sucking the big three dry, as he has been doing in Benfica for some years, you know?
Yeah,
exactly. There's going to be consequences for this, of course.
I've heard he's trying to negotiate with Wolverhampton to change the club's name to Jorge Mendes FC. I don't know if that's going to come to fruition.
Os Lobos. The Wolves in Portuguese, man.
I'm gonna say that. Yeah, that's right. We're speaking with Rui Miguel, the editor-in-chief of FootballFactory.com. You can follow Hui on Twitter at Football Factory. Hui, let's get now to the Algeria game on Thursday.
Please.
Yeah. What are you looking for this game coming up on Thursday? You have to assume that Ronaldo is going to get at least a first half and to just get that chemistry back with the starting 11.
Yeah, I think Ronaldo will get at least an hour. Quite possibly the entire game, because he has not played for the selection for a while now. He did not play, I believe, the previous friendlies, which were in February, I think. He don't believe he played against the U.S. or Holland. So it's been a while. But by the time he plays on Thursday, he would have had 3 days with the squad. And I mean, I'm sure Fernando Santos understands this, and he's probably thinking even more of his superstar, right? Today and the next 2 days of training will probably be something that is very crucial for the Thursday match. So I think Cristiano Ronaldo will play, if not the entire game, very close to it. I think I can guess what the squad will be.
Sure.
I think it will be, and I think most people would agree with me, it will be Patricio in goal, Fonten Pepe, center back, Cedric Guerrero, the fullback, then will be William, Matinho, João Mário, Bernardo, André Silva, and of course, Cristiano Ronaldo. I think that will be the squad. That's probably Portugal's best squad.
Would that be your ideal? Sorry to interrupt. I apologize for interrupting you. But do you think that would be your ideal starting 11 with choosing from the 23-man squad that Fernando Sanchez is taking to the World Cup?
You know, I would have probably debated Font for Ruben Dias. But considering when I saw with Font and seeing that he's been there already, no, he's been to a major tournament. He started the Euro 2016 final. And any manager will tell you experience matters, of course. Experience matters in life. It matters in our life, of course, right? Font, to say what you want about him, he won't get the jitters that Ruben Dias does. And it's a little bit unreasonable to expect Ruben Dias to be kind of ready to face what is perhaps one of the three biggest favorites of the tournament, along with Germany and Brazil. So I'm going to say probably Funt. Yeah, Funt will start. And I think that's probably the squad, the best squad for in terms of quality and experience.
We are talking with Rui Miguel here of Football Factory right here on the Celeste Sound Podcast, Episode 3. Rui, finally, what is your expectation for the Celeste Sound? Obviously, we're coming off of the 2016 Euros, and where we finally broke through and won a major tournament. But, there is a top three, as you mentioned, a top four, top five that Portugal doesn't seem to be a part of. When people are talking about favorites to hoist the World Cup trophy in July. But what are your expectations and what do you think would constitute success for the Celeste Sound in this World Cup?
Geez, that's a big question. To be honest, my hope would be that we can win the entire tournament.
Oh, of course.
But yeah, it's just like realistically though, it's not that. I think that Portugal, it punches way above its weight class. But seeing that this is international football, and as we know, there's so many great nations. There's probably 10 countries that are good enough to win this tournament, and the margins are so small. And football is a low-scoring game, so a bounce, a defender, or a goalkeeper's mistake could make such a difference. Having said that, I think Portugal kind of lines up pretty well. I like I mentioned, Brazil, Germany, and Spain are probably the best teams on paper. They of course they have some concerns, of course. But they are the three that probably look the most formidable. And then, of course, France, Belgium, Argentina. Argentina not playing well, and they seem to be a one-man team, despite the fact that they have so many good players, but they just don't seem to play well together. But Argentina, you can't kind of discount. Sometimes a team will just hit their stride at the right time. Qualifying, of course, is a different... whole other animal than like a tournament. In Germany's case, for example, they haven't been doing well in the friendlies, and some people are reading a lot into that as if it's a reflection that they're maybe not as good as they were, but I don't really see that. Having said that, I think Portugal would probably be amongst the top seven countries. I like Portugal's, I see Portugal as like a very strong dark horse as a country that got a talent. It has one of the two best players in the world right now, but we also have a lot of good depth. In some ways, I think Portugal is deeper than they were at Euro 2016. And I've never shied away from praising Fernando Santos. I think he's done a great job with this squad and his mentality. Although winning. The way Portugal wins might not be pretty, but you can't really argue with the fact that like it's working. I think Portugal has, in some ways, is always a little underrated because people often scoff at like the Portuguese league. They see players on the sheet. They'll see perhaps in other countries they see players that are on big clubs with a lot of money who are always in the Champions League, whereas Portugal sometimes you see players that are from Sporting, Benfica, and Porto, and they think, well, that's just a Portuguese league. I mean, these players can't be that good, right? But I think a lot of people will estimate Portugal because of that fact, and definitely Portugal is one that people tend to underrate rather than overrate, which is a good position for Portugal to be in. Actually, Portugal, I always love saying this, but Portugal's been kind of underrated for 800 years, just as a country in general, right? So every time you seem to doubt them, we always they always seem to come back and defy expectations. And you know, Portugal is the great overachiever of football, and I think the media would underrate Portugal, but the players know Portugal's quality, so there's that too. So I think my expectation would be, in terms of success, we'll be getting to the semifinal. I think a lot of people, I've seen the quarterfinals as, most people are having Portugal go out in the quarterfinals to France or an Argentina, for example. I think, you know, that these tournaments never go exactly the way people expect. There's, you know, a favorite can go like Argentina, or even Germany could crash out in the group stage. Like last year, like 4 years ago, Spain crashed out in the group stage, as you remember. Mm-hmm. And Holland, which wasn't expected to do very good at all, they finished third. And then there was Brazil, never really looked very, very, very good, in my opinion, I remember. And then got to the semifinals to face off against Germany, and we all know what happened there.
Yeah, complete destruction.
Right. Yeah, complete, like, they fell apart. So, example. So, I'm thinking, as it stands, this is, in some ways, we have some veterans that have been there before. Pepe, Ronaldo will quite possibly be Pepe's last tournament, and perhaps even Cristiano Ronaldo's last tournament for Portugal. He'll be 35. And it might be a situation where he might actually see. No one's really thinking about this, but it might be a situation where Santos might have to stop calling Cristiano Ronaldo.
Say it ain't so, Hui.
I know, but it's just like eventually he's gonna. You know, might not even be the best option anymore. So, but anyway, refocusing. I think getting to a semifinal is very realistic, and I think that's success. And then in 2 years, just thinking ahead, we got a lot of really good young players, and Portugal will probably be much more balanced over the next decade. And I don't see the team dropping off at all. I don't see the team dropping, going back to being what they were before 2000, when Cristiano Ronaldo. Before the times of Figo and Cristiano Ronaldo, where they did not qualify for most tournaments. I don't see that. I think a quarterfinal is realistic now, and then make a strong attempt to defend our European title.
Hui, I can't thank you enough for joining us. As I mentioned at the beginning of the interview, when I first started this podcast, I wanted to make sure that I can get not only you know, people and friends of mine that share the love for this team, but also get folks in the media who cover the team. And you know, this is an international podcast, as I learned last episode, where we have some listenership in Canada and in Portugal and in England. So to get somebody who covers the team, especially as we approach the World Cup starting next week, I do really appreciate your time and your insight. And hopefully we can do this again either during or after the tournament.
Yeah, absolutely. I'd love to do it again.
Thank you, Hui. You can find Hui on Twitter at Football Factory. He is the editor in chief. Of footballfactory.com, Hui Miguel. Hui, thank you so much again, and please say hello to everybody on Dundas, okay?
Yeah, absolutely. Oh, I actually go there a lot too. I can't believe you actually know that.
Oh no, I have family. I have family in Mississauga and in Brampton and in Milton as well. So we got a lot of love up there, and yeah, Dundas. You can get everything, as you mentioned earlier. You can get everything that you could possibly need on Dundas.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, Hui, força, and thank you again.
Sim, obrigada, e tenha uma boa noite.
Igualmente, thank you.
Okay, ciao.
Again, my thanks to Hui Miguel, editor-in-chief of footballfactory.com. You can give him a follow at Football Factory. Let him know that you heard him on the show.
and give him some love so that he knows that his time was well spent with us here on episode number three. That will do it for us on episode number three of the Celestin Pod. I want to thank you guys so much for the continued support as we march towards Russia. I will be in Sacramento. Here in California, I will not be marching to Russia, but figuratively, I'll be marching to Russia with the green and gold. Again, you can follow us on Twitter at Celestin Pod, also on Instagram at Celestin Pod, Facebook.com/CelestinPod. Download and subscribe on iTunes, podcast.com, and PlayaPod. PlayaPod you can download on both iOS and Android. As for episode number four, we will drop a day or so after the Algeria match. So hopefully we can get out of that game unscathed. And you know what? Wouldn't it be nice to just go into the World Cup with a victory? You know, just, you know, 3-4 goals, make Algeria, you know, just a laugher. But again, I'd rather take no injuries and a draw, hell, even a loss, if it meant that we go full strength to Russia. Again, episode four will come to you about a day or so after the Algeria match, so be tuning in for our very next episode. Again, thank you all for your support. Muito obrigado and Forza Portugal!